Welcome to the Survival Prepper Show, where being labeled a crazy prepper is a badge of honor. Learn about disaster preparedness, survival, and get ready for whatever challenges might come your way. This is not your typical prepping podcast, and they won't be silenced by the censors. Here are your hosts, Duff and Dale.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to the show. That was a close one. I thought I was going to be starting the show by myself this week. Oh, you're muted.
Of course I'm muted. I'm just giving up on that, everybody. Like, you know what? I'm going to be muted about 90% of the time when we start the show. Otherwise, when Dale's playing the music, you hear me clumping around in here and making my coffee. So,
yeah, we got that 3-minute intro and then Brian kind of disappears. And then 30 seconds beforehand, I'm like, all right, Brian, where are you at?
Yeah.
So at any rate, hey, everyone, welcome to the show tonight. Got a few things we're going to talk about tonight, doing a SWOT analysis, prepping supplies and stuff, and a few other things. I suppose before we even start off, I ought to talk about, we only got 2 days left until democracy is toast, right? Until democracy dies. I mean, that's what we've been hearing, right? Until they start killing all our kids and, you know, we start getting put in jail.
Well, I think that's all going to happen anyway, one way or the other, right? That's yeah, the way we're heading. So, like, you know, we're there. Hey, show them your shirt, man. Show them your shirt. You've been messing with that.
Oh, yeah. I'm printing up. Well, I'll just show. I've got an idea because.
Yeah, show them that shirt. Dale, this is a test run of Dale's shirt that he's been working on. And so he used, like, I don't know, his car cover or something.
This is a kind of a test product, but what I want to do, because we've had some people talking about like the hat we have and even my Survivalist Prepper logo, had some people asking about if shirts are available and stuff like that. So I found a way, and this is pretty low quality, like Brian was just talking about. I want to make something that is good, like professional quality. And I've been researching that stuff and figuring out how I can do that and make it to where I don't have to like use Teespring and have people, you know, as soon as we sell 40 shirts, we'll be able to ship them out. I just want to do them one at a time. But I've got a few design ideas that I wanted to throw up and see what everybody in the chat thinks, because I've been working on this the last couple of days. But the first one I've got here is my squirrel, my Survivalist Prepper squirrel, protect your nuts. Because I think as preppers, that's what we do, right? We protect our nuts. We squirrel things away and all that stuff. So I think that one's kind of neat. This one was just a kind of a different type of squirrel, and I can't use this one because I don't own that squirrel, but I could make something like that angry squirrel.
You could go onto the web and have some dude in like probably working out Pakistan change that thing up for you for like $5. You'd be good.
Yeah, that's what I'll figure. Just tell him, hey, I want a picture like this one. I just want it to be mine. I can use this one. I just can't sell it.
I like your other one, man. That squirrel. There you go. The squirrel with the gun in his hand. That one's cool.
Yeah. Well, this one right here, it's still got the Gaston flag. And this one in Morse code says F off. Which is, I think, is pretty freaking cool. But then we've got our TSP logo that I need to do a little bit more work on this to make it look good on a shirt. And then, of course, this, my favorite one, is the Since 1984, because that's exactly where we're all headed right now is 1984. So those are the ideas right now, plus a few of, like, Survivalist Prepper ones. But I just want to make shirts that one, it helps support the show, and two, kind of for preppers that doesn't say I'm a prepper right on the front of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, any rate, it's gonna take me a little bit of time to make sure I can get quality shirts, not like this one.
Well, I figured something was going on.
What's that?
Usually, I talked. You know, we talk every couple of days, right? And so I hadn't heard from you for like four days or so, something like that. We hadn't talked 3 or 4 days. And so it's like a different level of quiet when you get some new technology thing you're trying to figure out. Like, you just disappear, man. Dale's gone. Where's Dale? And then I'll see you come back. Like, look what I've been doing.
So. Yeah. I've been in Adobe Illustrator trying to, you know, figure all that crap out rather than, you know, just paying somebody, which might end up being what I do anyway. So, but it'd be pretty cool because then I can throw some stuff over at the SHTF shop, maybe even throw some bonuses for anybody who joins the bug out location, have them, you know, a shirt of their choice or whatever. Anybody who becomes a member here.
Well, you better hurry up, man, with the diesel fuel shortage, it might cost you, you know, you might have to ship that thing Pony Express here pretty soon.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, Lisa has horses. Like, that might become the thing again.
I'll get some pigeons. Just do carrier pigeon.
Yeah, you could be like the postman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Riding around delivering mail in the apocalypse.
Yeah. That's a little more work than I want to put into this. But, yeah, we'll see. Maybe I'll hire one of the kids and send them on the cross-country horse trip. It'll only take 68 days for you to get your shirt once you order it. At any rate, with this whole election thing, just real quick, I just wanted to ask you, do you think it really even matters? Because I think it's almost like the only reason I think it really matters, it's like taking the car keys away from the kids, right? They bring it home with no gas in the tank, the engine's knocking or whatever. But it's not like Republicans are going to do anything like Biden and Obama and Hillary are saying. They're not going to do anything. They never do.
Well, I think where it might matter is that those two parties, like, they each have their own thing going on enough on a lot of occasions where, like, just if they have the Congress, right, if they win just the Congress, the Republicans are going to try to set up, you know, themselves for the next election. So they're going to come and just submarine everything Joe does. So at least they don't do anything more. I mean, I was just looking at it for a podcast I was getting ready to record. And I want to say, where was those numbers? Like, just looking at how much money we've spent, right? In 21, we had two bills go through for like over $3 trillion. They're trying to put another $2 trillion spending package in. We've sent over, I want to say $40 billion so far over that to Ukraine. So it's like, you know, we got, there's literally, it's, Elliott Hedge Fund, which is owned by Peter Singer, I think his name is, it's a really big hedge fund. Like, a lot of people look at this guy and say, hey, he knows what he's talking about kind of guy. And he's coming out predicting, like, they're like, hey, we may literally the global society may end up having a lot of problems here real soon, like meltdown level stuff.
Yeah.
And internal issues. And well, here, where was that thing? Let me pull that up real quick. It's really,
while you look at that, Pat in the chat was saying hoodies. And yes, we're going to.
Yeah, hoodies would be cool, Pat.
Yeah, long sleeve shirts, hoodies. I mean, not just. That's what's cool about being able to do this myself and do it professional, where it's professional quality. I can do any of that stuff. And women's shirts, men's shirts, different sizes, all that stuff. So it'd be pretty cool. Anyway, yeah. Did you find that?
He says Paul Singer is the guy's name. And he was saying that. That the extraordinary period of cheap money is coming to an end and has made possible a set of outcomes that would be at or beyond the boundaries of the entire post-World War II period. In other words, the economy is going to be like cratering, you know, worse than it was then. And he says the this letter that they sent out to their people says that said that we are on the path to hyperinflation, which could lead to global societal collapse and civil or internal strife. Now, this is a hedge fund dude, right? And he's out talking about global collapse. I mean, he's not some, well, I mean, maybe he's a prepper. I mean, he has enough money. He probably has a bunker somewhere. But yeah, that's what, I don't think we're going to pull out of that. Like, how do we pull out of that? They're not, what are they going to do differently? Are they going to put a budget in the place?
Yeah, yeah.
Are they going to repeal the Patriot Act?
Yeah, with all this stuff going on, I don't think it matters. Yeah, and it's interesting, all this push for the green energy and the push for all this stuff, and maybe it is going exactly according to their plan, but it's like everything's going to fall apart before it even gets to that point. So, and
yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Would you be surprised that dude's correct? I wouldn't be surprised at all. We're seeing the beginnings of that stuff right now.
Well, I mean, how long have we been heading down this road? I mean, when you think about like what we were talking about with, you know, what's the White House saying? I mean, where they literally say that, well, inflation's not bad, like right now, because it hasn't gone up much since last month, is what their terminology is. Record high inflation. And so now they're not talking about record high inflation. It's like, well, it hasn't gone up that much lately, like a little smidge, you know, and you see what, like, you know, you look at all the news, like the mainstream media people that are in DC and New York, like they don't live in what's going on and seeing what, like, people are struggling, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's going to, I don't see how is it going to change anything? What's it going to change?
Yeah.
They just that the Republicans can stop the Democrats from passing crazy spending packages that they're not in, that they're not good on. Other than that, and then what happens, right? You know, we're gonna they're gonna maybe in 2024. I think when we move to the presidential election, like the switch is about ready to get flipped, because once this election's over, the midterms, Trump's gonna probably announce within a I imagine like the minute all the polls were closed, that dude comes out like, I'm running for president, right? Like he's waiting. Like, you know, he's like, he's sitting in the back, like chomping at the bit. And as soon as that happens, I mean, what kept the mainstream media going for all those years was Trump.
Yeah. Right? Round two.
Like we're just getting, like we, all this stuff we're doing right now, we're just going through the line to get up to the roller coaster. Like we're just now getting in the seats. And I think once the election's done, they're going to put the bars down. They're going to launch that roller coaster out, you know, and you always go up the hill for a little bit and then there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You had mentioned how they're basically, they live on a different planet than us. They don't understand the struggles that we all have to go through. And with that, before we get it, this kind of goes with the whole SWOT analysis thing. I was talking to the roaming prepper on my show last week about the 90% die-off number, right? And these big, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. This was written like 15 years ago. I don't really care about this article so much. It was some dude that basically said that 90% of the people are going to have to die. And these people in Reason are just calling them a whack job. My question to you is, even though these people that become billionaires or reach this status where they're disconnected from us, they don't live the same type of life as us, even though they won't say it out loud because they'll get labeled as Hitler or whatever, how much do you think Bill Gates thinks about, hey, you know, even though he won't say it out loud, how much do you think Bill Gates thinks about the fact that, you know, some people do need to die?
Oh, I don't know, man. You know, I mean, I imagine some people out there, if that's the case, and, you know, what's the number, right? Like, what's the number at where people can support themselves, the environment that they live in can, like, I mean, part of the problem that we're having right now, right? Africa's having huge food problems.
Yeah.
Because of all the stuff in Ukraine, right? Ukraine's wheat and rice and all that stuff went to feed a lot of the poor countries in Africa, fed countries in Asia, different places. So they're struggling, right? And so what's the ideal number of people on the planet Earth? I don't know. I'm sure some environmentalist is going to tell you one thing and someone else is going to tell you another. But, you know, whatever that number is, I hope that the first die-off starts with the guy that wrote that article.
Yeah.
And that'd be a good place. Like, I hope that's his intent or something. But does Bill Gates? Maybe. I mean, you look at if you want to believe how far do you want to go down the Great Reset rabbit hole?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of where I was going with this. Not the fact that they want that many people to die, but if something happened that caused that, I don't think they'd really be hurt by that because they live on a different, level than us, a different set of problems and all of that than us. But if some of us went away, that would help them with their philanthropy and all that crap. And this is hypothetical, by the way.
how many people got pushed into convalescent homes and died at the beginning of COVID?
Yeah.
And that, you know, hey, that we want to do amnesty for. That's what we're talking about. We're going to do that video on, hey, we'll do amnesty, but you need to agree to a couple of things. Like you feel fucking killed a bunch of old people in convalescent homes.
Yeah. But let's forget about that. Let's just shake hands and
they were old.
Yeah. Like that side of the aisle ever. It's like you always say, don't ever apologize because somebody calls you a racist or somebody calls you this or that, because they don't want the apology. They want you to apologize, but that's just to keep the thing going.
And part of the thing is nowadays, right? Like if they call you a racist, like that's just their blanket thing they throw out there now. Right. And so it's like, no, it has no meaning.
Yeah.
Like if I did some racist shit and you called me, I'm like, oh, you know, okay. Now we got, but I don't like you use it. You're, you know, Chicken Little. You think preppers are Chicken Little? Look at those knuckleheads.
Yeah. Racist, fascist, Nazi, all those. It's just words people use these days. It's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. All ridiculous. I think it's interesting though. And like you were talking about that maybe it's not the whole 90% thing. I mean, coming up here in the future decade, two decades, who knows how long, all this stuff that just starts the dominoes begin to fall and everything starts cratering. I think there's going to be a lot of that happening. And Roaming and I were talking about that too. Is that die off number correct? That 90%. Was it you that told me, was it James Wesley Rawls that came up with that number?
Yeah, when I went down, because I was looking to try to figure out where that all came from. And every source that I went back to, I think it went back to, was that 1 second after? They cite that as like their, I think their point, or was it 1 second after? Maybe it was James Wesley Rawls, one of the two. But it came out of the prepping community somewhere. I tried to find, is there like a place where they have some actual studies and where they've said, hey, this is what the deal would be like if the world shut down. But you think about it with what they're saying is if the war heats up more with Ukraine, or like this thing that we were just talking about, this, you know, global collapse thing that the hedge funds talking about, the Elliott management group's talking about, like the possibility of societal collapse. I mean, if Ukraine shuts down, if we end up having a bunch of problems in the States and we're not shipping out a whole lot of food, well, all those countries that depend on it, where are they going to get it from? Well, I imagine those countries would all melt down.
Yeah.
And what, they can't feed each other? What happens? That's what leads to revolutions and civil wars and all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I think you could see a lot of die off just because of the insanity that would ensue.
Yeah. I think in first world countries, it may be that. But I'll tell you what, like Africa, some places in the Middle East, I don't know that it will affect them because they're living like that now.
It would affect them huge. It would affect them huge because right now they get a lot of their food comes in as aid.
True.
Like when I worked in Africa, that was part of the big community there when I was working there was these huge NGO organizations that go, and you know, I'm sure they're all sucking up money, having parties because what they do, but they also give out, like they go around and they get rice to people and they do all this stuff and they do a lot of it. So I think that's where you would see the problem is they don't have any ability in some of those countries to grow their own food in the amount they need not to have mass starvation.
Yeah, true. I didn't think about that. Yeah, but that's very true. Yeah.
So I think that's where you would see the third world and maybe even some of the second world melt down. I mean, look at think about us right now, right? Look at the stuff that's going on in Brazil. I know if Stoic or Fabian, if he's in the chat, he can talk about it. He's in Brazil.
That's crazy.
Right? It's going crazy down there right now. But you know, lay that over the United States, right? I mean, you go back to when Steve Scalise and that guy shot up the baseball game. Right. Then Rand Paul got his ass kicked and his ribs broken and everybody, all the left jumped on that like it was cool. And they were all laughing about it. Yeah. Then what happens? You got the guy going after Kavanaugh that turned himself in when he got there. But now you got there's people running for different offices that have had gunshots through their windows now. And you know, all kinds of different. I'm not even talking about Paul Pelosi because I'm still not convinced that thing was some sort of break.
Something's crazy with that situation.
Yeah, it seems like, I don't know, two dudes in their underwear hanging out in the house. I'm not sure what that it's all about.
Yeah.
So, but anyhow, like, but there's enough violence going on, like towards politicians where that was always, remember like when John Hinckley and all them would go, oh, that guy's insane. It was like, they're crazy. Right? That was the thing. Like, he's a crazy guy that tried to shoot the president. Well, and I still say they're crazy, but man, there's a lot of people going after politicians more and more. And I think it's becoming more normalized where you're going to see more of it. What does that lead to? More of them being behind their ivory towers. They got to protect themselves more, you know, just maybe they go out there and they smoke some of they smoke some politicians. Where does that lead? Like, I think we're heading towards that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and globally too. And I think that's partly to do with one, their mishandling of, and this is, I'm not just talking about our dudes. I'm talking about just globally mishandling of all the systems. And then the fact that all this information is available now, it's not just 5-10 reporters. So they're being held accountable for this crap and people are getting pissed off about it and they don't know what to do about it. So they're trying to put the clamps down and it just, it just seems like it's that volcano getting ready to erupt. And I mean, who knows? I think in the short term, I'm more worried about putting food on the table and keeping the house warm. But I think that's something that's definitely, you know, on the horizon.
So, well, I mean, look at the deal. The FBI, I think the FBI just, because here's the thing, right? What faith, when we look at what our I don't want to call them our leaders, but we'll just use leaders for right now as a reference just to, so we all can agree on the group of people I'm talking about, right? They're not really leaders, but we'll just go with it.
Yeah,
so, officials. But like, look what the FBI just came out, did, right? Did you catch the Seth Rich stuff? Do you know Seth Rich?
I was going to research that, and I saw something about it, but I didn't research it. So what?
So Seth Rich is the guy basically that was involved with the leaked DNC emails in 2016, the stuff that submarine ended up leading to Hillary getting submarined, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. So he was that. He gets out, they leaves his job, and then ends up, you know, he died. Here it is. The murder of Seth Rich occurred on July 10th, 2016 at 4:20 a.m. in the Bloomingdale neighborhood of Washington, D.C. Rich died about an hour and a half after being shot twice in the back. The perpetrators were never apprehended. Police suspected he had been the victim of an attempted robbery. Right. The 27-year-old Rich was an employee of the Democratic National Committee, and his murder spawned, this is on Wikipedia, so take it for what it is, several right-wing conspiracy theories. Yeah, because all those conspiracies we had are so untrue, not including the claim contradicted by law enforcement branches that Rich had been involved in the leaked DNC emails in 2016. His name was all out there over the emails. All that stuff was going on. The guy ends up getting shot in the back. It's pretty much like he got Clinton-sided, right?
So, yeah, he got Hillary'd. Yeah.
And the FBI just came out and they requested that his files, like just like the Kennedy assassination, Seth, we need to keep those files closed for 60 something years, 66 years.
Yeah.
If there's no there, why do we need to have the files closed? So let's go back to the other stuff we're just talking about, you know, with the way the country's going. You keep the leaders keep proving over and over that we can't trust them. It's not like hey guys, you know, we made some screw ups. Can we all just go on? We won't do it anymore. Like, yeah, we get it. No, it's doubling down, tripling down. They don't even give a shit anymore.
Yeah. And I understand there's some aspect where it's, you know, protecting certain names and sources that the excuse they give all the time for all that stuff. But, you know, if they throw the American people or, you know, I don't know about other government systems and all that. I'm sure they're pretty similar, though. But if they throw us a bone every once in a while and prove to us, hey, this is, you know, not as crazy as you're all making it out to be, that'd be one thing. But they don't. I mean, what have you heard about Epstein, Jack, since it just all just went away? You know, all of these things, that the Vegas shooting, Jack, about that. So it's almost expected to have people kind of come up with this crap, because if you're just going to hide shit, cover shit up, and then the things that you do say, you're going to be completely full of crap about, what do you expect? And I think that's the mentality these days. People are finally waking up to the fact that, hey, you guys are full of shit. That's my thing with all this money in politics. There's probably close to $1 billion a year we pay, or people donate to a bunch of freaking liars. And it's, you know, the priorities are backwards with all this crap, but
yeah.
So it's kind of our bed. We're making it. And you know, whatever comes is, it's sort of our fault for allowing it to happen.
I've been watching, you know, I watched some, I don't watch TV. So I just watch YouTube video clips. Right. But watching some of the mainstream video clips of like, and from on the right, like, oh, this is like the savior. You know, I remembered it, you know, years ago, like, oh, you got to vote because the country, if you don't do it, the country's done. Really? Like, we already are. again, the Republicans aren't going to vote for, hey, let's actually get a budget. Make sure we have a balanced budget. You know, let's make sure that we, you know, do right by our people. No, they're not going to do any of that shit. It's just going to be same old, man.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And that's, the Republicans don't, well, at least in behind the scenes, I'm sure they do a whole bunch of stuff that we don't even, are not privy to, but they do a whole lot. So this, all this rhetoric is, it's not about the Republicans taking over and turning this country into a hellhole. It's about them not having the power, because they're the ones doing the things that they blame the Republican Party for wanting to do. I mean, it's pick your poison, you know?
I have friends that protect some of the top people in Silicon Valley, right? Like arm's distance, they talk to them on a daily basis kind of things, you know, protection guys. And you'd be amazed at the number of like the conservatives, the Republicans, that I guess not conservative, Republican congressmen and senators that are out there, you know, giving those dudes sack rubs on a regular basis over and over and over again. Yeah. So like when people are like, oh yeah, he's all about this. No, they're all about the money and they're all about the power. And anything they put out in front of you is simply to get you to buy into their bullshit so that you can vote for them to keep getting money and keep getting the power.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at Dan Crenshaw, man. That dude, that dude did it the right way for him, not for the American people. But for him.
Yeah, that dude cratered right into being a swamp creature. Talk about creature from the Black Lagoon. Yeah. I guess he's lucky that, you know, I guess, well, I mean, it makes sense. You know, maybe he's lucky he was a SEAL so he can swim around the lagoon really well. I mean, and that's the sad part with Dan Crenshaw. Like that dude was a legit, and still, I imagine, is a legitimate badass. That dude was at the tip of the spear. Like he don't get in a higher unit than that guy did. And he becomes a politician and, you know, goes off and starts just blowing massive dick.
Yeah. It happens to way too many of them. That's my concern with DeSantis is because you get into Washington and you start playing the game and you start just, you turn into somebody totally different than who you were in the beginning. And that's a lot of local politicians that get popular. They make it to Washington and it's a different story.
I think DeSantis being a governor and him, again, as long as he's a Republican, I won't vote for him. But him being a Republican or being a governor and going through all the heat that he got during the pandemic, dude, that guy never he never flinched, man. Right. And most of his shit was spot on. So I don't know. I don't know if you would have that problem with him in there. Like he doesn't have, I don't think he has the ego, like with Trump. Trump's biggest problem is just his ego. Like, you know, he's not going to shut up. He's not going to stop saying shit that gets people pissed off, doing all the stuff. Like, I think his biggest problem is his ego, to where so much so that like, hey, when I'm going to, you know, should I put Jeff Sessions in as attorney general? Maybe I should ask somebody, you know, go talk about it. Maybe like we should figure this stuff out more. So I don't think that, DeSantis has that level of ego, man. I think DeSantis, the guy was in the Navy. He was in the Judge Advocate General group, I think part of NCIS, and did some, like a lot of the high end military units, when they deploy, they'll have attorneys with them because they're rolling up people on the battlefield. So it's like some legal things and all that shit that they worry about. So I think he did part of that. Like he has a legit record, man. DeSantis is a badass too. Yeah. And I think he's a lot more, I think he's a lot more sure of himself, you know, and his views. And I think he might actually be fine, but I don't see that dude coming out and running against Trump, because I think Trump would throw so much mud on him that all Trump has to get, you know, get his Trump supporters. I mean, so many people that love Trump, hey man, that guy's an asshole. Don't vote for him. They won't vote for him. And so I don't see him coming up, but maybe
I don't know. I think it would be interesting because it wouldn't be like Trump going after Jeb Bush or, you know, anybody that was on that stage. I think if we went after DeSantis, I think that would be a dogfight, and I don't think people would be this time around. I don't think they would act the same way. Like, holy crap, did you see that? They'd almost take it as an insult. Like, hey, you know, because there's a lot of people that like him. I mean,
Yeah, but you still, I don't know, man. I think it would do enough damage that even with Joe Biden running again, you know, I don't know that the Democrat or the Republican Party wants to take that chance. I mean, DeSantis is still young, you know, young enough that like he's not an old dude. So, you know, 4 years of T-Rex back in there, and then you get DeSantis. And dude, I'm not convinced Tulsi Gabbard. Like Tulsi Gabbard just came out and went total pro Second Amendment.
Really?
100% down with the Second Amendment. Just came out and like did a video on that. So I don't know what she has cooking.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
She was campaigning with Kristi Noem in South Dakota. So who knows what she has going.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
That would be an interesting ticket.
These midterms are over.
That would be an interesting ticket, her and DeSantis.
That would
be, but I don't see, but cool. Like, which one of those would you, I mean, they're both, you know, I mean, again, you know, DeSantis being a Republican, but like, they're both at that level where I'm like, yeah, I could see either one of you doing it. So who would want to take the nod to be VP? So I don't know that they would run together.
Yeah. I just think you need somebody cool in there like that right now.
Yeah. She'd be cool at Secretary of Defense. Yeah. Shut down a bunch of this stupid shit. Her or Jocko would be great.
Yeah. All right. So I want to pivot here and talk about this SWOT analysis stuff. I've got, let me pull it up here. I wrote this article a while back over at Survivalist Prepper and talking about a SWOT analysis. Now, this is something that do you guys use it or did you guys use it in the military? And I know it gets used in business as well.
Not really. They do all kinds of other sort of, you know, mission analysis and everything like that. But it's a good thing to know how to do on the fly.
Yeah. And yeah, the reason that I like to do it because it helps you really kind of hone down on, you know, what you're preparing for. I mean, we all know at a basic level what we need here and there just to get by the normal stuff. But a SWOT analysis is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and I can't read that damn word. Threats.
Threats.
Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So if you do that SWOT analysis, and even if it's just kind of in the back of your mind or subconscious, you get an idea about what you're prepared for, what you need to work on to get more prepared, what you have that is going to help you get through a situation, and what you might need. So in this, we'll just dig into the four of these real quick. Your strengths, and in this article, let me put this big screen so I can actually read it. Analyzing your strengths will give you a better idea about how prepared you actually are. Sometimes we give ourselves a little bit too much credit, and sometimes we overlook what could have helped in a survival situation. So with these, it gives you a better idea about, or it gives you more confidence, I suppose. So if you're looking at your strengths and you're thinking, okay, I've got this, you're looking at your skill set, maybe like you've got military background, you've got medical background, you got way more cool stuff than I do. But you've got all of those strengths. So you analyze those first and it gives you that a little bit of confidence, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it allows you to refine, to know, you know, what it helps you identify your capability, right? When you know your strengths and your weaknesses. Okay. What am I capable of here? So that way you go into under something, it's really what you're doing with a SWOT analysis. You're building your situational awareness, right? About the situation. What's my capability? You know, okay, I'm strong with this. Here's where I'm weak. Can I divert some of my strengths over here? If that goes, you know, what are the opportunities that come up? What are the threats that might face me? And it's great because it's a great, what you're really doing is you can kind of analyze your risk as well. And that's the big part about preparedness, right? We try to analyze our risk all the time. You know, oh, what's coming down the road that is going to cause a problem for me and my family? What can I do to prepare for it? Like, let me get a food dehydrator, let's stock up on food, right? That's all strength. Preppers have tons of strengths across the board. Like when you're like me at the military, dude, you got a ton of strengths. Like you can go out and like take, you know, grab a battery in a box and throw a solar panel on it. You know how to do that stuff. Like you're really resilient. By preppers, by and large, are really resilient. So it's a huge strength.
Yeah. And I think the longer we do this stuff, we do, you know, gain all of that stuff. And that's by doing something like this and looking at the opportunities we have and the things that we need to do. And we build those strengths with all of that stuff. Yeah. And I just thought about you're going to be having a book coming out pretty soon about some SHTF stuff. And this is almost like a really general, small, like subsection of what your whole, cause you, I've seen a couple of your things and you really, you get into the weeds with all of this stuff as far as defining it, but it's actually pretty cool.
Well, it's, you know, I think if you break everything down to its fundamental like elements, you can look at it and it's like the strengths and weakness. Like when we talk about prepping, right? What are, when you first start, are you prepping to like, hey, I need to survive this big doomsday event? Well, you don't have anything. So what are you really prepping for? Well, you're prepping to get by for like a week. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, you know, and extending that and extending it. That's how you kind of, we kind of try to prepare, because if you prepare a bunch of things, but then you like, I got a bunch of food and I got my ammo and all this, but oh, I forgot water. Well, you only got 3 days worth of life in you. Right. So I think when we look at this stuff, it's if we break it down to its elements and we start looking at, and it gets back to the SWOT analysis, what are your fundamental strengths, you know, for dealing with a situation? If it's not something relevant, but yeah, I don't need to worry about that. We need to think about my like, these are my strengths that I have. And then like I said, be honest with your weakness. You have to be honest with your weaknesses, or you're not getting what you're not getting the best possible information out of doing a SWOT analysis.
Yeah. And I think your weaknesses is almost just as important as your strengths, or maybe even more so, because you do need to figure out what those are. Sometimes they can't be overcome. You're talking about your age, your health, your monetary situation. Sometimes those just are what they are, and you have to figure out kind of ways around those. There isn't one defined solution. So you have to, by actually paying attention to that and focusing on it, you can probably figure out some different things that you can do to make your situation as best as you possibly can. So I think it is important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't give yourself too much credit, you know? I mean, well, be brutally honest with yourself when you're making the list.
A lot of people don't think about their, a lot of us have, you know, we think we're more capable than we are at things. I mean, look at most preppers, right? Like mid 40s and 50s typically. I mean, there's some younger people, more like homesteaders, people getting in it, but by and large, we're older and, you know, we're all got our like, filling up 50 pounds of stuff in our bug out bag. Right. Like, yeah. Well, so I was actually working on mine. So, you know, one of the things I put in mine is those, you know, those patches you stick on your back that have the heating stuff in them to like,
yeah.
Bengay. Cause those patches take up really little room. I slip it down in the backpack. I got like three of those in there. I figure I got a week or week and a half of being really sore, and I top off the bottle of Motrin. You know, you think about that. What are we doing? So that's your weakness. And what's your other weak? Like, okay, well, I can walk 10 miles a day. Okay. When is the last time you walked 10 miles a day with a backpack on your back full of stuff and, you know, and Motrin and heating pads? Maybe never, maybe 20s. So you're 10 miles a day. Might get it on the first day. That third day, you're not getting 10 miles a day. Yeah. Your old self's going to be over there. Like, oh, I just want to lay here and roll around on my back on the dirt and halfway get a rock to help loosen up these things. Like, you're going to be sore, like that kind of stuff, right? That's your weakness going, hey, I know that like, this is actually what I'm going to be able to do. Like you said, like maybe you can get a good full day or two out of you. At some point though, you're like, hey man, I got to realize that I'm not as strong as I used to be, or not as capable.
Yeah. pack some meth in your bug out bag for day three.
Well, that was, you know, it was one of the early books. I wish I remember what it was, but it was one of the early first sort of dystopian fiction books I read. And the guy had no dose, you know, those caffeine pills you can buy at 7-Eleven, the no dose. Yeah. It's not like the old White Cross mini thins that you used to get that were pure ephedra. But you know, he packed that because he saw like, hey, I might have to stay up sometime. So
Yeah. And we're not sitting here condoning packing narcotics and putting in your bug out bag.
Caffeine pills, man. No dose. It's like legal. It's caffeine pills. What are you talking about, crazy?
No, I was the one that mentioned meth, so.
Oh, you, yeah, that's right.
You know, it's just like medications, like Misreading the River was talking about injectables and medications for pain relief and all that stuff. The aspirin and the Motrin, yeah, sure, it's going to work, but there's stuff out there that works a whole lot better. It's all prescription, but there's painkillers.
Well, you got to remember, too, better. Though, on that stuff, right? How much does that affect your thinking along the way?
Yeah, your
does
cognitive
affect your
ability?
Awareness? No, you go take some of those painkillers, and next thing you know, you're going to be racked out on the side of the trail for a while. You got zero security going on.
Yeah.
You'll be lucky if the raccoons don't rustle through your backpack as opposed to somebody coming along if it's a bad situation.
Yeah. They're trying to legalize shrooms out here in Colorado, too. I couldn't imagine bugging out and taking. You probably wouldn't care how tired you were, but God knows where your head would be.
you could microdose them. People microdose them. It takes a lot of people with PTSD. The big thing is microdosing with them now. And whatever it does, it takes like that edge off and they don't get high. It just takes the anxiety edge off. So maybe that would work. I mean, imagine, you know, if it's the apocalypse and you're bugging out, there might be some anxiety with that too. But I don't know. I think I'd have other priorities when I'm bugging out. I think I'd stick to the Motrin and the Tylenol and
the
odorless Bengay and give that to the people that, you know, give it to them. So some people when you pass by them, so they hang out behind you and they're a buffer between you and anyone that comes along.
Yeah. And if you've got your bug out bag ready to go, the odds are you're carrying it every day. So you don't want that crap. You don't want the illegal crap in your bug out bag anyway.
Yeah. I
was wondering about that though with the mushrooms and stuff, because they have these commercials out here and it's like, maybe it's because I'm just so used to, I mean, it's a hallucinogenic. So when they're talking about legalizing it, I'm like, I'm missing something, because pot is one thing, but I'm like, it's insane, but I never thought about the micro dosing aspect of it. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's we have a concept of it because everybody thinks about just, you know, getting blasted and going off to see another planet kind of thing.
Yeah, hippies and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, there's micro dosing. There's been a lot of studies with it for people with trauma, anxiety, all kinds of stuff where they're finding a lot of the, but it's one of the big things with PTSD now too. There's places that do ayahuasca, right? And I've never done it, but my understanding is it takes you to places, and a lot of people come out of that, and it really regulates them helps them regulate their shit for a while afterwards, like months, where they don't have, because the problem is you run around with this anxiety all day long. It's like you feel like you're dying all day kind of stuff. So it helps. Supposedly it helps with that, but
yeah. All right, so we got off the rails here a little bit talking about that stuff, but
that should be the name of our show, the Off the Rails.
Yeah. We talked about threats, and then there's the opportunities, and this is kind of where you kind of combine those two. And I guess this whole thing is kind of combining all four of them, but the opportunities is once you figure out your strengths and your weaknesses, you can better define what supplies you have, what supplies you need, the skills that maybe you need to become more proficient in. So if there are first aid classes, stop the bleed classes, maybe active, shooting drills where you're not just pointing at a target, point and shoot type thing. I mean, that type of stuff that you can do, put those things on your list, those opportunities that you have to add to the strengths, I suppose, right? Am I making any sense there?
Yeah, well, I think if you look, when people do risk analysis, right, they look at your vulnerabilities. The threat is really, that's the thing that's going to get you, right? And then you look at your level, sort of your level of preparedness, right? But I think when you look at opportunities and threats, it's kind of the same in a way. One's beneficial, one's negative, right? A threat is going to have a negative consequence on you. An opportunity will have a positive consequence. It doesn't, we put this thing on it like it's negative, but you can have a positive consequence of something. So I think when you really look at it, it's like, what's your strength? What's your weakness? what do you have laying ahead of you? Good, bad, indifferent. Which route do you take? Right. I mean, because you may have those, the if you're planning for like a long-term thing, you have the threats. You go, okay, here's my threats at 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, whatever. And then same as your opportunities. And sometimes it could be in the moment, right? Are you positioned well enough to be able to grasp a threat or to be able to avoid a threat and grasp an opportunity? A lot of times you can look at as avoiding a threat as an opportunity to avoid the threat. So it just depends on how you look at it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And on that, we're talking about threats last here, but I don't know that it threats may be the first kind of step you would want to take in this, because you want to define what the situation is, right? And then you look at your opportunities, your strengths, your weaknesses, all of those things and how they kind of incorporate in that. Because you need to do that for every single thing. So with threats, I always say start locally, prep locally, and then expand your way out. So think about that small scale stuff. Think about the stuff that's going to affect your entire family, the stuff that's more likely, and then go with each one of those and kind of expand out with this SWOT analysis, right?
Yeah, I think it's like that survival rule three is a survival pyramid kind of thing, right? What do you deal with first? If you look like survival, you deal with the things that are going to kill you first, right? So you have to be able to have situational awareness. You have to be able to have like an immediate reaction to something happening. And then you start getting, you know, that happens in seconds, right? And so, but then you get into your 3 hours without shelter kind of thing, 3 days without water, right? Those are your threats. But if you can prioritize them, just like you're saying, start locally. You're starting locally and time-wise with yourself,
mm-hmm.
and then expand from there. Part of the thing, when I do my survival pyramid, the top level of the pyramid, when you get past water and food and all that, is society. And that's really like where you're going, like, you know, start locally, take care of yourself, take care of your family. Once you guys are secure, you can take care of the old coot next door. I can't remember his name that you guys always used to have trouble with.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Johnson. And then, okay, Mr. Johnson, there are people on the block are taken care of. We're good. All right, well, let's go see, like, hey, can people recover? I think you're spot on. And I think you have that element of time in there. What's the most critical that's going to happen to me the fastest? And how can I expand what I'm doing now?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's just a good way to kind of approach each situation, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities. And then, you know, you focus on a certain threat. And you think about your strengths, opportunities, and weaknesses. And at the bare minimum, I mean, it's an easy way to kind of define what you want to do. I don't know how much information you want to give out on this. Do you have the title for that book yet? I don't want
the SHTF book.
Yeah. I don't want to. It's going to be pretty cool. I'll wait
until it comes out, but it's going to be an SHTF book. My Mind for Survival book's coming out. That's Mind for Survival.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But it'll take like what we talked about here and make this look like kindergarten. Let's
expand on it. I always try to look at things when I break it to its elements as a system, right? Like, yeah, just like you're talking about, you know, you're going to help you and your family out. Okay. So if you're prepping, that's where your first focus is. Once you got enough stuff, then it's like, okay, what can I do to help some other people out if that's the route you want to go?
Yeah.
Right. So you keep expanding it.
Yeah. Hey, Stoic's in the chat. Fabian's in the chat. Fabian, we were talking about you earlier. How's it going down there in Brazil? From what we're seeing, it doesn't look too fun, but be curious what you think about all the stuff that's going on down there. What we were talking about earlier is how everything's just going to shit in the entire world. So you're just kind of, you got a lot of stuff going on down there. So I suppose before we get out of here tonight, I did want to talk a little bit. I saw this Glenn Beck video the other day from this lady from The Federalist talking about the new right. And I wanted to get your thoughts on it because I do think it's kind of interesting. We think of conservatives, and this is more people. I don't want to kind of start talking about politicians because I think politicians are completely different than the average conservative out there. I think they're two separate different things. But Glenn Beck was talking to this chick, and this is about a minute and a half. Let me pull this video up and listen to her thoughts on it about the new right, and then get your thoughts and my thoughts on all of this stuff. Let me put this on right here.
you know, from where I sit, conservatism as a set of philosophies is dynamic, right? And it's resurgent always because it's flexible enough to meet the moment. And I think what I have looked at in Washington is a conservative movement that's become fat and lazy and attached to dogma. And they've disrespected conservatism by pushing it into these set of policy prescriptions that have become so rigid and ossified that any movement away from it is like, well, you're not a conservative. When in reality, conservatism is supposed to conserve the things that we care about,
yeah,
which is nation, family, community, human dignity. And by definition, when you attach yourself to those ideals, the policies are always going to look a little bit different because the threats are different, mm-hmm, right? And the moment that we are living in right now, I would say, and again, I'm not 40, but I'm like mid-30s. Yeah. So it's in my lifetime, I would say it is the highest stakes moment for these set of ideals that I have ever seen.
So I think that's pretty interesting because I like the way she put it. One, that conservatism is about conserving the things that are good in the country, right? You hear all the time from people on the left that talk about how conservatives are just unwilling to change. You want to keep the way everything was at the old school and all that stuff. And it's just not true. So I think there is a change. I think there is sort of this shift to the new conservative crap where it's not the same old school, you know, the left wing wants to always say they want to, you know, keep the racism and all that crap still. And that's not the case. I think there is that. It's almost just being responsible, it seems like, these days, where the other side is just completely off the rails, to me anyway.
Well, and the other side thinks you're off the rails, right? That's the thing.
Yeah.
So I think
in America.
In a way, what she is saying is, because she talked about like these, you know, lazy conservatives in D.C. She talked about the politicians, and I don't think it's they're lazy. They're Republicans. It has nothing to do with them being conservative.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about being a Republican that can prey on conservatives. That's what they're doing. It's just what the Democrats are doing to their side. You know, again, we talk about how authoritarian the Democrats have become. And again, we go back to what party signed in the Patriot Act? Republicans. So it's about being Republican. It's about being able to use conservative values to fire up people who will vote for them because that's what their game is. I mean, they can't, all they do is campaign. Every time they jump in front of a camera, it's campaigning all year long. You know, that's why I mentioned the thing about, you know, having friends that, you know, like protect some of the top people out in Silicon Valley is their profession. Those people that are espousing all that conservative stuff that you see sitting in the rotunda up there talking on, you know, Fox and all that stuff. They're out there talking to those people all the time. And then on the next breath, oh yeah, people are terrible. No, they're out there pandering all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's especially the younger generation. I think it's interesting because the new right, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it kind of seems like that, where there's a lot of people that were center. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the Rogans and just a lot of people that were, you know, are proclaimed liberals. But the new right could include a lot of that stuff because there's been that shift where the left, politicians anyway, have just gone completely off the rails. The right, as far as politicians, really haven't changed much from what they've been doing for 50, 60 years. But the conservative people, the actual citizens, I think it's almost where the new right is almost center. And I'm not talking the extreme right. I'm talking.
No, I think a lot of conservatives have softened our stance on things. I mean, think about it, like in the 90s and the 80s. People were like against gay people a lot more. Now it's a lot more people are just like, yeah, whatever. Like, so I think some of that stance is softened, which is crazy because, you know, it's like when a conservative started accepting gay people and being like, ah, I'm cool with it. Then that's when the Democrats took it. Like, that's where we're now down to like a lot of the crazy shit that they have going on. This, you know, these policies and all this stuff that they're trying
to
push.
Women's sports
because they got to keep trying to go farther. Oh, you're good with that? Oh, we got to find something else to come after you now. Right. So
Yeah, we got to put a dude in a chick's bathroom. Yeah, we got to go off the... And that's kind of the new right, because it is accepted. And you look back, it wasn't that long ago where all of that stuff was just not... The whole gay stuff was not, you know, even accepted one bit. And now it is. And you look back and you're like, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't really... And maybe there are people that listen that do actually care. I didn't really... I've got more things to worry about than that crap. You know, my life. So that's kind of where I stand on the whole thing. And I think a lot of conservatives are kind of that same way now.
I had my next door neighbors, they're an older couple from Belgium. Like, and they had a son who, this was like in the 70s when I was young. And the son was in his early 20s. And he looked like he was like a clone of Freddie Mercury. Had the big stash and all the stuff. So like
fucking teeth.
His name was Rudy. Rudy was a nice guy. Worked at the bank, all that. Like, I was like, well, Rudy's not a bad guy. Like, so I was like, okay. I think like in the prepping community, one where I've really noticed a big change is in the 80s when I first got in, it was survivalists and all that. We talked about this the other day offline. Mm-hmm. Is it was a lot of racial shit in the survivalist community.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now there are all kinds, tons of people of, you know, from different races, backgrounds, and everybody's pretty much fucking cool with it. Like if you're not, then you can go fuck off. But I really like that. So the prepping community has really, I think, especially since, you know, maybe since 9/11 and everybody's seeing like the draconian shit and, hey man, I just want to prepare. You want to prepare? I like, okay, cool. Because what are we? We're all like outcasts together being preppers. And so I think that's been pretty awesome.
Yeah, there has been a major shift. And I guess that's kind of the same thing with the Conservative Party, where a lot of people, Democrat politicians, don't want that to happen. So they have to, you know, bring this stuff up all the time. But yeah, in prepping, it is that there's been a massive shift, even just in the time that I've been doing this stuff, where it's like, and my thoughts on the whole thing are, if you are in some sort of survival situation, I'm not going to pick and choose. I'm not going to be such a, you know, I'm not going to want to pick and choose based on somebody's skin color. Now, when it comes to how much food they have, how much, you know, skills, what skills they have, how much of a burden they're going to be on me, that all matters. But the other stuff, I don't think matters. And I think that's where prepping has kind of evolved into that. You know, if you're doing something, great. If you're not doing something, leave me alone. I mean, it's that simple to me. Again, I've got so many other problems and everything to worry about. I don't need to add onto my plate some nonsense. So,
well, and you know, and that it's interesting too, because I think the left is really shooting themselves in the foot too, because like you can go on to YouTube and start going down the YouTube rabbit hole on like political reaction videos and stuff. And there's a lot of reaction videos of black people who and Hispanic people who I imagine before now, up until recent times, would probably have been voting Democrat, because the reaction videos are all like, can you believe this shit? And I think what's happening is, you know, people are like, how long are we going to believe the nonsense you're passing on to us? Mm-hmm. And so they're starting to, and they're calling bullshit. And so when they call bullshit, where does that leave them? Right here with everybody else. Right? Like this mob in the center that's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, look at all the, you know, there's, I mean, again, look at people that are aligned with Jimmy Dore, that like the left is just shitting all over. Right. There's she has a really good YouTube channel. Her name's Sabby Sabs. Go check her out. Like she's very left, and the left can't fucking stand her, because she makes good points and she shoots holes in their shit. And she's honest about being a hardcore liberal, you know, and they can't handle that honesty because they just want to use it as a selling point. Just like what we're talking about. It's not it's not conservative. It's the Republicans that are bad and they're trying to sell stuff to the conservatives. It's, you know, it's one of the things when you go on to like some of the Twitter stuff, like the Democratic Party pays people Twitter posters that have like big followings, pays them a lot of money to share their shit. And not only share their shit, but just, hey, say this, do that. There's a bunch of them out there, and they're getting paid millions to build Twitter followings and push this stuff out, because That's all. That's what they're trying. All they're trying to do is just gain influence on bullshit. They're not trying to affect change. They're not trying to get any of that.
Yeah. Hey, Stoic in the chat said, I lost where he said could be a Brazilian spring. He said something to that effect going on down there. Yeah. So it's kind of just a wait and see type thing. Yeah. You mentioned Twitter, and I want to kind of talk about that a little bit before we get out of here, because I think it's really interesting. I mean, nobody knows what the hell this is going to turn into, what the hell Musk is going to do. But I think it's really telling that all the media personalities, all the politicians are losing their minds about this stuff, because it's almost like they had this clubhouse, and now the clubhouse is under new management. And they're freaking out because they're not going to be able to do the same things. They're not. I think it's really telling, because the average, most Americans are not on Twitter and don't give a crap. But these people, it's like the sky is falling to them because this is their world. Their thing.
Yeah, they lost their thing. Well, we'll see what Elon does. Elon needs to come out and address the shit where Twitter was working with the federal government. And Elon has a problem, right? You know, he talks about all the satellite dishes he's put in Ukraine. Who do you think the civilians over there are using it so they can communicate with people? Or is that being used for military applications? They're using that shit to drop bombs on Russians, right? Yeah. And whatever. Hey, I don't mind. Go, you know, like, you're at war, go fucking kill one another. That's what you do. So he's very in bed with the government too. So he needs to address his shit, because they had the Twitter board come out like, hey, can they still get on the call and start telling you to censor people? Because at some point he's getting paid for all of his satellites over Ukraine by somebody.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I, hopefully it, you know, him getting in there helps keep people from getting targeted, censored, canceled. One of the things that they say it's going to do, he's going to charge $8 if you want to be very, so like you'll have a check mark saying you're verified as who you are. I guess that's partly to stop. I was watching Tim Pool. He was talking about, I think they call it them sock puppets, like, you know, a sock puppet. And what the sock puppet is, one person will go create like 10 or 15 accounts, different variants of it. So when you post something that their side doesn't agree with, that person goes through all 15 accounts and they just swarm you with, just blast everything you say.
Yeah.
So all these organizations and stuff, they're going to have to pay a lot of money to Elon to be able to do all their fuckery that they've been doing with all these, having multiple accounts and all that stuff. So you might see some of that, but I noticed, I've already noticed, I like Twitter. I've always enjoyed Twitter, 'cause I can see what people are like. The people who are out there running their mouths and that people, you know, put on the news and stuff, or the mainstream media, you can see what they're saying in real time. So, I've noticed a big change in Twitter since he's taking it over.
Yeah. And I think it depends, because I think he could just kind of, it may not be what people's ideas of it will be. And I sure hope it doesn't turn into something like True Social, where it's just all out, you know, just bitch fest on both sides of the aisle. I want both sides of the discussion. I don't want one side being censored, and you know, the other side being able to say whatever they want without any repercussion or anything. But we just don't know. I mean, it's all so new. We just don't know what he's going to do with it, and if he's going to cave.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting how it happened right before the election too, because, you know, they fact checked Biden on some of his shit, and then Biden pulled down a tweet, and someone brought up a good point on the Tim Pool show. They're like, he tweeted as the White House. That's like a public thing. You can't delete. That's public record. You can't delete that shit. And he deleted it. So he's destroying documents, you know, on that. But I think it'll be a good thing over the long haul, hopefully, you know.
Yeah. I just think it's hilarious how they're losing their crap, because they've lost their little club, their little ability to kind of be this little echo chamber. Like, somebody popped their bubble, their little echo chamber, and now they actually have to. They're going to have some opposition that they may have to face. I think that's a good thing for society, and not this whole downfall and this misinformation. Biden even said the other day, he was like this about how Twitter is so bad with misinformation and all that, which is pretty telling, because Twitter is run, or all you see is all the left wing crap on Twitter. So what does that say when it's that bad?
Well, Andy Ngo is that journalist that got like beaten the head out and during the riot or stuff that was going on in Portland a while back. He just posted like screenshots of like one of the, like some guy that was a Twitter engineer that he was talking about when he was running around all dressed in black with Antifa and breaking shit up in Portland. Right. So
yeah.
the thing with Twitter, and we all have to, and all this shit is, if we're about freedom, if you say you're about freedom, then you have to be willing to be okay with the other people saying the shit that's going to piss you off, that you don't believe in, that's totally against what you believe. You have to be okay. Like, I'm not saying you have to enjoy it, not saying you have to feel good about it, but you have to be okay with, that's why I've had a bunch of people like, you know, talk shit when I'm like, I'm okay with people burning the flag. I don't want to see it. I love the American flag, right? Like, you know, I've seen that flag like sitting over a lot of different, you know, shitholes of the world, like trying to, well, I don't know, not Iraq necessarily, doing good things, but you know, I still have that attachment to it. And at the same time, the ultimate symbol of freedom is some dickhead's ability to burn that flag. Like, yeah. I actually get like, gives me a little chubby, like that's fucking freedom. And you don't even realize right now you burning it thinking you're a protest, dude, you're just showing how free you are, dickhead.
Yeah.
So same thing with free, when people are talking, I may not like what you have to say, but man, hashtag freedom, dude, go ahead and say it.
Yeah. That's why I read the Associated Press. Sometimes they put some crap out that just drives me nuts, but you got to get that side of the story. Regardless, it doesn't mean you have to agree with it. The Hill even sometimes, but that's also, I think, part of our mentality where, because I'm right, anything I don't agree with, a lot of people tend to just call a complete bullshit on it. And it's not necessarily the case. You got to at least take into account, maybe there is something to that side of the story, and then, you know, kind of go with it from there. But honestly, it's easier said than done, because most of the time I just think they're full of shit. But
well, that's the thing. Like, what are they truly, you know, what's their angle? Are they Kamala Harris that's just talking some random shit?
Yeah.
Or are they somebody that truly has a fucking opinion about it? Because none of, you know, Kamala and Biden, they don't got opinions on anything. Their only opinion is like what benefits them, what gets them more money, more power, whatever, keeps Democrats in office longer, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, like when someone totally believes in what they believe and you have a conversation, I may not walk away understanding it, like, or believing what they believe. But at least once I understand what their perspective is and why they truly believe that, if they're not full of shit, right? Like, okay, I could see why this person believes this. And it's like, they've had this happened in their life and they think that should be helped out. Okay. Like, all right, now we're cool.
Yeah. Well, and that's harder and harder to find these days though, because that's why some of this stuff just irritates me so much, because Biden will say something stupid, like, you know, how he's raised Medicare for everybody's getting more Medicare because of him. And then you get these writers that go into detail about how this is so fantastic, and to the media's defense, some of them did call bullshit on his, because there's a provision in there that with inflation, Medicaid raises too. So he didn't do a damn thing. But you get these
he's
writers
toting that he's toting that people got increases in their benefits.
Yeah, look what I did
got
for
increases.
Yeah,
because inflation went up.
Yeah, but you get these writers that will go along with what he's saying and try to defend him, and that's what pisses me off. You want to be honest and have an opinion, that's great. But when you try to gaslight and you try to, you know, pull the wool over people's eyes just because you have to support that certain narrative, that's what pisses me off. And that happens more often than I ever remember it happening these days. Maybe that's because there's more information out there, but it's crazy. You're muted.
Yeah, I think you have to peel yourself farther away from mainstream media. Like, and identify on Twitter, on YouTube, the people who are putting up content who are either, because there's a lot of the Young Turks. The Young Turks get money from the Democratic National Committee supporters and stuff like that. Millions of, during the, I think the Clinton, when it was with Hillary and Trump were running, they had like $20 million to promote Democratic National Committee shit. So have to look, what are they doing? Are they getting funded by somewhere? If they're getting funded by somewhere, The Hill, right? All those kind of places. The Intercept that Glenn Greenwald started, it was bought by, you know, by billionaires, the mm-hmm. Washington Post, you know, Jeff Bezos. So where are they getting their money from? If they're like us, you know, we're out here giving your opinion, the Angry Prepper giving the opinions, you know, other people out just, hey, we're just doing a show, you know, trying to support the show. Then I go look at those people, especially the people I don't agree with, because they're being honest about what they're saying. And I could get good information about why they feel the way they do.
Yeah. I've probably listened or watched 5 minutes of the Young Turks in my entire lifetime. Oh, and that's 5 minutes too much.
Hey, a bunch of bullshit artists straight up.
Yeah. Yeah. Motherfuckers. It's horrible. Mm-hmm. It's like waterboarding, man. Like if somebody wanted to torture me, put that shit on TV for an hour and make me sit there.
They just
and watch
straight
it.
Up just, they just lie about shit. Like, yeah. Like, dude, like, really?
Yeah.
They're terrible.
All right. Well, I think we're going to get out of here tonight. You have anything else before we get out of here, Brian?
No, my throat's about done.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm going to put you through. Yep. You got 15 more minutes of the after show. Yeah, we are going to do the after show tonight. Talk about this article that I did a video a couple weeks ago on, and there's a couple in there of these survival tips I wanted to get your thoughts on. So we're going to do the after show right after this. And also with everybody watching tonight, tomorrow night, I'm going to be doing a live video tomorrow night at 6:00 Mountain Standard Time, 8:00 Eastern with Vision Preparedness. Would be a pretty cool video. I'm going to talk about how to kind of maintain your sanity mm-hmm. and prepping with all the things that are going on these days. Should be a fun video tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. And that's over at not the Survival Preppers. It's the Survivalist Prepper YouTube channel. With that, everyone in the chat, a lot of you there tonight, appreciate you all joining in tonight. And if we don't see you in the after show, we'll talk to you all later. Take care and prepare.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Survival Preppers. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to join us on YouTube for our weekly live shows. For more information or to connect with Duff and Dale, visit thesurvivalpreppers.com or thebugoutlocation.com for members-only content and prepping courses. See everyone next time.